This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. This is one of those things that just drives me insane. You've got the destroyer senators, you've got people who didn't step up in the moment when they could have come on and said, yeah, we're gonna support infrastructure, we're gonna support rebuilding America, we're gonna take off the red hat and the blue hat, we're gonna get that hard hat on, and we're gonna build stuff. They could have voted for it, they could have gotten behind it, they could have supported it, but they didn't. And there are 30 Republican senators who, when this bipartisan infrastructure bill went through, chose, no, we're not going to support infrastructure spending. We're going to take our ball and go home. Now, it's interesting because this isn't new, but it did catch the ire of the social medias today. It's not new that these people who voted against it, then when the good stuff starts rolling out, when there's a bridge ceremony, where there's a ribbon cutting, or there's a new road that people go, oh my gosh, that road is paved, or you name it, broadband access, let's say. When things start going, hey, that's a good thing, they want to jump right in. They want to jump right to the front and go, hey, this is great, isn't it? Thank goodness we did this. So you got John Cornyn, Texas senator, voted against the bipartisan infrastructure bill. He tweeted out that Texas is receiving $3.3 billion in federal funds to boost broadband expansion. And he links, to this article saying how great this is. Like he was behind it. He wasn't. He voted against it. The dumbest guy in the Senate, Tommy Tuberville, someone who voted against infrastructure improvements, he tweeted out, broadband is vital for the success of our rural communities and for our entire economy. Great to see Alabama receiving crucial funds to boost ongoing broadband efforts. Not that you did anything to help that money come in there, dumbest guy in the Senate, but take credit for it anyway. Look, hey, this is great. It's great. Thank goodness. It's great. And the thing, as I'm seeing this play out, again, not new. This has been going on for a very long time. Our Republican destroyer friends attempting to tear things down. And then once it's being built, they want to jump to the front of the line and go, hey, isn't this great? Look, hey, this is great. Vote for us so we can continue to not do our jobs. And it got me thinking that as I was looking through the list of 30 senators who voted against the infrastructure plan, it's not surprising they come from heavily red states, taker states. And you go through the amount of money, of tax dollars that goes into these places, like Alabama, perfect example. The amount of federal money that goes into Alabama far exceeds what Alabama sends to the federal government. They are a taker state. And these taker senators are doing everything they can do to starve the federal government of resources. And it got me thinking today of going, explain to me why Joe Biden is doing, And now, look, I've said this before. Joe Biden is a much better man than I am. He is a much more concerned person about the future of the country, much more compassionate, empathetic, all of that stuff. I am not. I wouldn't give Alabama, if you voted against this, if your senator voted against it, if your senators voted against it, you wouldn't get a red penny, not a freaking dime. Your infrastructure could crumble for all I would care. Biden's better than that. There's a lot of money going to these taker states. And I want to make sure that we understand that the people who are pushing against investments, the people who are pushing against a system of the federal government helping to rebuild the country for the good of the country, for the general welfare of the nation and the nation's economy, I think it's important that you point these people out. Ron Johnson in Wisconsin, another example of this. A guy who has voted against every opportunity to make our country better, a clear destroyer, somehow reelected in Wisconsin. Mind-blowing. And this is one of those moments where you look at the investments that are coming, and there's part of me that's not as good as Joe Biden. It just is. And we've talked about the taker states. We've talked about how they are basically sucking blue states dry. And there's so much more that should be invested in blue states because of this redistribution of wealth. And again, the very people who voted against this are the same people, the same destroyers who want to go after the IRS. Say, no, we're not going to hire new IRS agents because, well, they would go after rich people to bring more money in. Think about this for a second. The people who told us that they care about the deficit, they care about our debt, they're the very people who are doing everything they can do to destroy our ability to go out and get the revenue that is supposed to come in. It's not even talking about new revenue. It's just about enforcing existing laws. Again, our Republican destroyer friends, the law and order people, except when it comes to rich people and their money. It's quite remarkable. Now, President Biden going to be kicking off the big campaign. And look, Biden economics is doing well. The economy is moving in the right direction, creating jobs. Inflation's coming down. And look, you know, Biden's eager to get out there and start, you know, talking about how we've turned things around. He took office. We were not in a good place. Jobs have come back. Investments have happened. We're moving in a good direction. And look, I think it's important for him to go out and make this case. I've said it before. You know, we've got Jelly Bucket Joe, who just shows up and does the work. You know, Builder Joe, Builder Biden out there, you know, doing the work. Not taking credit for much. I think he has to. I think the Democrats have to come out and come out big and say, look, the reality is we've been helping the economy grow. We've been building it from the bottom up, middle out, not top down. That is a good thing. That's going to help working families. And you look at that bridge in Philadelphia, you know, that I-95 bridge that collapsed because of the fire. They pulled all of the resources together. It shows that we can do things, and we can do big things if you just get these destroyers out of the way. You know, I love hearing my Republican friends, well, you know, regulations stop everything. Well, I don't know so much. I don't know so much about regulation. I know Republican senators stop a lot of things because the U.S. Senate is where progress goes to die because of our destroyer senators. Now, as I said, you know, the president is touting his jobs record. In fact, put out a graph today showing that during his tenure, he has created more jobs than any of the recent presidents from Reagan forward in 2 years than they did in four. He's created, you know, just under 500,000 jobs a month now on average. Now, immediately the Twitter's, no, these are all those jobs came back. No, those jobs are gone. What happened under Trump's watch, mishandling the pandemic, pretty big freaking deal, cost millions of jobs. getting them back up took some work. It's just not like flipping a switch and everything goes back to normal. There was a process. Now, this is what I love my right-wing friends for, because they believe the economy is just like, yeah, flip that switch back on, get everything rolling again. We had major supply chain issues. Still do. And they're working on those. But the fact that they're talking about reshoring manufacturing and moving away from the old neoliberal kind of policies that got us into this mess is enormous. And something we need to get behind. The fact that we're investing in chip manufacturing and investing in renewable energies being done here. Important. And the kind of stuff that I got to tell you, I think is going to reap him benefits at the polls, because it's wildly popular. They want jobs back in their communities. They want good family sustaining wages. And saying, hey, look, we want to make sure that those jobs that are being created are the kind of jobs that people can make a living on is an important part of this. And there's finally a president who talks like that. So for me, this idea that he's going to run on his economic platform, he needs to, because it's a winner. And for all of the rhetoric we're going to hear from the Republicans, they have done nothing to help move in a positive direction. Everything on the Republican side right now, and I hate this. I hate this about where we are. Everything that they have done is to try and slow Biden's economy, to try and cause a recession, to cause chaos, to destroy. That is what they are all about. And I wish it was different. I do. I wish they had an agenda. I wish they would say, look, we control the House. We're going to actually pass something that's going to make the economy better. We're going to pass our own infrastructure bill. We're going to pass our own investment in healthcare or education. We're going to show you how we're going to help an economy. I know, but Rick, they're not that party. They're the party of the invisible hand. They're the party of the invisible man doing invisible things behind an invisible curtain while giving you the invisible finger. That's who they are, and that's where we are when they take control of the economy. Because interestingly enough, in looking at the graphic that Biden put out, it's interesting to see how during Republican administrations, job creation tanks. I mean, tanks. And during Democratic administrations, you build things back up. It kind of goes to show that maybe austerity doesn't work as well. And I know, but Rick, you're talking about an economy that works for working people. That's not what Republicans are in favor of. They want an economy that works for the very wealthy. And that is apparent when you look at all the tax cut bills that they've gotten through, that the only real legislative victory for Donald Trump was a massive tax handout to the very wealthy. When you look at it from the frame of, but Rick, Republicans have an economic agenda. And when they are in control, it works exactly as it's supposed to. It makes the wealthy and big corporations wealthier and more prosperous, and it makes working people poorer. And when Democrats get into office, the agenda is to how do we make working people, how do we make them whole? How do we get them jobs? How do we get them the ability to support their families? Again, my more moderate Democrats, but we got to worry about corporate profits too. I'm not so concerned. Corporations will take care of themselves. They do really well at lobbying in their best interests. Not so much yours or mine or working people's. And this is where, you know, that election, those election things matter. So I got to tell you, I'm hoping Joe runs on and highlights hugely, to use a Trump word, how well he has done for our economy. And basically, you know, shove it right up there. Anyway, I'm going to take a quick break. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, podcast. Wherever you get your favorites, you'll find ours. Back after this.
We We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Quote of the day comes from Liz Cheney, former congresswoman from Wyoming. What we've done in our politics is create a situation where we're electing idiots. Yeah. She's not wrong. Look, I'm not a huge Liz Cheney fan by any stretch of the imagination. That Cheney name, that makes me very, very cautious. But she's not wrong. We are electing idiots. You look at the dog and pony show going on in the House, the bread and circus nonsense that they're pulling. I just, Liz, you're right. And you look at the Republicans, the person who's probably going to be their nominee for president, went on Twitter today to lose his mind. That social thing he's got, that Truth Social. could somebody please explain to the deranged, Trump-hating Jack Smith, his family and his friends, that as President of the United States, I come under the Presidential Records Act, as affirmed by the Clinton Sox case, not by this psycho's fantasy of the never used before Espionage Act of 1917. Smith, in quotation marks, not sure why it's in quotation marks, should be looking at crooked Joe Biden with two D's and all of his crimes that he has perpetrated on the American public, including the millions and millions of dollars he extorted from foreign countries. I think he should worry about his own legal troubles first, but let's deconstruct this a bit. Outside of the fact that he misspelled Biden's name, and I think he did that on purpose because he's that kind of punitive child. But you know, the misspelling and the use of the hyphen in psychos, go back to school, learn a little something. But the open threat, and I take that as an open threat, you know, would somebody please explain to the deranged Trump-hating Jack Smith, his family and his friends? What? Because what this is, for those who don't know, this is code. Hey, crazy people. Hey, dim. Hey, poorly educated. Go find Jack Smith's house. Go knock on his door. Go harass his children. Go harass his wife. Go after his friends. Intimidate them. Because this is what they know. They know this works. Look what they did to Peter Hotez. They literally sent people to his house because he won't debate a lunatic. This is the kind of dog whistle. And this isn't even a dog whistle. This is like almost an outward command. Hey, crazy people, go harass Jack Smith. This is the kind of stuff that they do. This is what fascist dictators do. This is the kind of stuff that authoritarians do. And the weird thing is the Trump folk, they don't care because that's their mindset. And as I've said before, there are those, the fives that you're never going to get. You don't even bother talking to them because you're never going to reach them. Like this guy from this, there's this, I'm not even going to say the name of it. It's one of these right-wing outlets that, you know, is trying to be extreme beyond the extreme. They're trying to be MAGA ultra. And one of their correspondents, there's a video going around on social media. One of their correspondents said, look, we don't give a damn what the recordings say. Nope, I don't care what the recording says. You could bring out 100 other recordings. What I know is Trump put America first. So you can't talk to these folks. And these aren't journalists. These are propagandists. What they're saying is it doesn't matter. Facts don't matter. Reality doesn't matter. Our dear leader needs us. Our dear leader, the one who is in real trouble. I don't know if you heard the tape, but the tape is pretty clear. The perfect tape. We have the perfect phone call now, and a couple of phone calls, actually. And now this perfect tape of him admitting, outwardly, very clearly admitting. One of the Watergate historians had a great quote. He said, you know, there are thousands of hours of Nixon, you know, and in none of those moments is Nixon as clear about the illegal actions that he was doing as Trump was. Trump was right. I know I shouldn't be showing you this, but look what I got. Oh boy. It's quite remarkable when you stop and think about it. And the fact that they're even trying to make this, I'm under different laws, I'm special. I don't think it's going to fly in court. And we'll see. We will see. Now, if that isn't enough to give Donald Trump heartburn, Jack Smith, who evidently is now living in between Trump's ears, evidently he's set to interview Brad Raffensperger. And you know who Brad Raffensperger is? He's the Secretary of State of Georgia. He's the guy on the perfect phone call. I remember Donald Trump called him and said, hey, I need 11,000 some odd votes. You know, go find those. You know, find a couch somewhere, dig your hand down into the cushions and grab me 11,000. He said, you know, I won by 400,000, but I just need 11,000. So go find those. He is going to be interviewed by Jack Smith on all of the stuff. And my mind goes, you know, why is it taking this long to get to him? And I know Jack Smith is now, I guess, setting up to talk to Rudy. So the walls, there was an 80s song, but I think it was The Call. The walls come tumbling down. The walls are tumbling down. But interestingly enough, the Republican Party is doing everything they can do to put themselves right in the heart of it. You have Kevin McCarthy, who is now, and this is bizarre to me, and I don't know how you do this, but they're attempting to rewrite history. They're going to go back and try and expunge Trump of the impeachments. And I'm going, I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you go back and, you know, we're just going to rewrite all this history. And it never happened. Never happened. It'll be in a sealed box somewhere. History will never remember this. I'm thinking about, you know, history as a whole. Yeah, I'm kind of thinking that, you know, maybe we could just, you know, rewrite everything, because this seems to be how Republicans act. And as I'm reading through this potential expungement of impeachment, I'm thinking about, you know, the book, you know, 1984 that I had to read in 10th grade. And I'm thinking about Winston Smith and I'm going, man, Orwell, how did you know? What crystal ball did George Orwell have to be able to predict a presidency, you know, decades later? But they're in the process of considering this. I don't know how you do this, but they're going to try. And they're going to try and defend dear leader, and they're going to try and rewrite what happened in the past while simultaneously going forward and impeaching Joe Biden. Now, they don't know for what yet. They've got articles of impeachment, not sure what they are yet. But, you know, much like all of the Rudy Giuliani at the Four Seasons landscaping facility making up a bunch of stuff, they're still not going in front of the people with robes, still not putting their hand on that Bible and swearing to tell the truth. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Right back.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So big news coming out of the Supreme Court today. And I got to tell you, shocker, shocker. 6-3 decision. Again, did I mention shocker? Because, you know, months ago I said, you know, I think it's going to be a sad day when this Moore decision comes down, because I had really thought that these six conservative justices are going to go, no. Let's do the craziest possible thing we can do on election law and give it to crazy people to do whatever they want. I'm shocked. There are only three people who thought that on the court. Clarence Thomas, Judge Alito, and Judge Gorsuch. Are you surprised Alito and Thomas? You're surprised Gorsuch. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on what this means and what this independent legislature doctrine could have been or would have been, and fortunately now is dead. I've asked Kathy Fang to come talk with us. Kathy's the president of programs at Common Cause. CommonCause.org is their website. Kathy, thanks for taking time for us.
Absolutely. So excited to be here.
So this is kind of a, let's use a Bidenism. This is a big freaking deal.
This is a huge deal, to use the words of other people. I will say that I think that when the case first came up, we certainly felt nervous, because just the way that it was framed as if it was looking at whether courts at the state level could go rogue, right? Are there any kind of bounds on state courts? But once we got before the Supreme Court, and let me be clear, there were some 45 plus amicus briefs on our side compared to a very paltry 10 or so on the other side, that basically urged the court to look at this theory, the independent state legislature theory, as something that was a very dangerous threat to our democracy. And those amicus briefs came from the left and the right, from people who are, you know, friends like at ADL, as well as people who are founding fathers of the Federalist Society, right? So people on the, you know, on all sides of the political spectrum who are urging the Supreme Court to say, this case is such a potential dangerous threat to our democracy. It would unwind what we know and think of as the fundamental checks and balances in American government, right? The very thing that ensures that one branch doesn't go rogue, we don't have dictators, we don't have political coups, we don't have lawless lawmakers, because we've got this system of checks and balances built in. And I think once the Supreme Court heard those arguments, read the amicus briefs, and really thought about what was at stake, it was right that six of the Supreme Court justices said, hell no, we cannot allow one branch of government to be absolutely and without any restriction able to exercise power when it comes to federal elections. That's just a no-go, because once we go there, then you are giving them the power to stay in office forever, to be able to shape and punish shape laws that punish dissent, right? We go down the road of the Politburo.
Right.
And I think that the Supreme Court was right to reject that crazy theory.
I mean, but dangerous threat to democracy sounds right up the row of where these guys are. Because look, I've been saying for a while that you've got people like the Federalist Society, you've got all these think tanks, you've got all this money going into these organizations to dream up the worst ideas possible. And this independent legislature doctrine, one of those bad ideas coming out of those think tanks. Again, there are a lot of these bad ideas. So I'm looking at this originally going, you know, I'm kind of concerned because this stuff generally goes slipping right through.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it didn't. So the question that I have is, you know, because I had a listener ask me the other day, you know, there have been a couple of voting kind of things coming out of the Supreme Court lately. Has the Supreme Court, or at least three of the conservative justices, had an about face, had a change of heart? Are we seeing a switch in time to save nine kind of scenario?
Yeah.
Where are we?
I think that only time will tell. right? We don't know whether this is a change that is a turning of a corner when it comes to the fundamental democratic principles that our country is based on. But what I like to believe is that it didn't take a lot for them to look at what's written in our U.S. Constitution, what's passed by Congress as federal laws like the Voting Rights Act, what's written in state constitutions to say, all right, while we may disagree ideologically on where to fall on many, many issues, there are some foundational stones that our country is based on. And if we start dismantling those things, we are, what, cutting off our nose to spite our face, right? I think just for that temporary political win, you will end up dismantling the very country that you think you are trying to gain power in. And so I think that the Supreme Court realized that in order to interpret history, precedent, the language of the Constitution correctly, what it had to do was take a step back from all of the political craziness, right? And I think that what they've seen is how far it will go. When you watch people storming Congress, right, with the flag as a battering ram, you realize that this is not a game anymore. You can't say yes to this kind of crazy idea and not expect that what you potentially are doing is opening it up to a total dismantling,
right,
of our country. And I think that in a lot of ways, this is the Supreme Court realizing they cannot go that far. And in the end, they are institutionalists, right? They want to preserve certain things. And I think that it's right that three justices who normally identify as on the right side of the column, right, conservative, would side with the liberal justices, because this is no longer about whether you are a Democrat or a Republican. This is about whether you're an American. And if you start dismantling those fundamental ideals that we have, you know, the thing that we all grew up learning in Schoolhouse Rock, right? There are three branches of government. Right. You need one that checks the other, right? Before you can pass a law, you know, the whole, what is a bill, right? And I really think that there was a revisit of what does this country stand for? And we cannot let that slide into an abyss simply for temporary political gain by one party.
Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Kathy Fang. Kathy's the Vice President of Programs at Common Cause, commoncause.org, the website, if you want to check out the work that they do and more information on this. So now this independent legislature doctrine,
yes.
It's now dead. So we don't even really have to go into how bad it would have been. It's now dead. My question now becomes, okay, this is now dead. What is the next bad idea? Because they never seem to stop. There's always something next. There's always, you know, more legislative action to put roadblocks between voters and the ballot box. There's always Texas trying to overturn elections that they don't like. There's always these things. What do you see as next?
Well, let's remember that the Supreme Court has dealt us quite a few blows when it comes to the kinds of protections that we have seen in the laws. Okay, so recently with the Voting Rights Act, we were all thrilled to death that the court left intact what's called Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act that says you cannot dilute minority votes, whether that's through the passage of restrictive voting laws or redistricting, right? But they did dismantle in an earlier case in Shelby County versus Holder in 2013, the protections against those kinds of very bad laws that would allow people to come into court and seek a protective order to prevent those bad laws from going into effect so that you can run an election on a free and clean process without having to allow that bad law to go into effect. Now what has to happen is you allow the law to go into effect, you allow the bad effects to happen, and then you go to court, and which does take time, right? So that could be one election cycles or a couple of election cycles running under gerrymandered laws or restrictive voting laws. Those kinds of things still exist. And so what we may see is, and we continue to see, is number one, states pushing restrictive voting laws that take away the ability for people to access the ballot, to register to vote, to cast a ballot, by putting a million hurdles in front of them. The second thing that we're seeing is a real attempt by state legislatures to claw back the right of people to use the initiative process to protect rights, right? And so in Ohio and Florida and many other states, there is an effort to try to up the requirement to pass a ballot initiative from 50% or 55% to 60% or 65%, right? So just keep raising the bar so it becomes harder and harder to do things like create independent redistricting commissions or protect reproductive rights or protect other kinds of rights that the majority or the supermajority of voters want. But now we're going to make it super, super hard for people to be able to pass those laws in states that have the initiative process. Now, not all states have that process.
Right.
And so the last way that people had to protect their rights was to go to their state courts, right? And so the good news is that the Supreme Court has said, okay, we're not going to blow up that bridge. That path still exists for you. If you need to, that is a bridge that you can go to seek justice from the state court. Thank goodness, right? Because had they done that, that would have left half of the country without any redress when it comes to violations of their voting rights, violations of individual rights, right? When it comes to thinking about elections. So I think that the court has started to pull away. I hope they've turned the ship in a different direction. And they're starting to move towards understanding that there are some basic fundamental voting rights that cannot be eroded any further. And I think that the events that have happened recently, whether you want to think about the coup, that the attempted coup, you know, that happened on January 6th, or frankly, Supreme Court justices, you know, being found out to have accepted essentially bribes,
yeah,
right? In office, I have to think that Chief Justice Roberts is looking at that and saying that goes too far.
Yeah, no, I've been asking for a while.
I can't side with that anymore.
Yeah, I've been asking for a while. At what point does Roberts start thinking about his legacy and what the history of the Roberts Court is going to be? Is it going to be billionaires having pet justices and, you know, maybe NASCAR robes? I don't know, but you know, I got to believe he's thinking about that. And I got to think,
he is. And does he want to be associated with people who are going to be found guilty of violating not just ethical rules, but laws, criminal laws, right? And I think that we've got a situation where a couple of the justices on the conservative side have gotten themselves very much caught in a pay to play kind of system. And I think on the other side, you have a group of justices, and I like to think that Ketanji Brown Jackson is a breath of fresh air. And perhaps Chief Justice Roberts is saying, you know what, maybe I need to rethink where I stand because I want to stand on the side of right and justice and good, right?
Well, I wish I had your optimism.
I believe it. And I believe that one day we're going to see photos of Chief Justice Roberts and perhaps Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson sitting on an elephant together, you know, exchanging good ideas, traveling the world, but expanding their minds, right? And really thinking about the world in a broader view. And I think that that is possible now that we are seeing that Justice Amy Coney Barrett, Brett Kavanaugh, and Chief Justice Roberts are voting in a way that I think is much more thoughtful, right? And they're not just voting in lockstep with a certain ideological bent, the way that some people who have proven themselves to be bought and paid for,
yeah,
by special interests are doing. So
I guess we'll find out, won't we? I mean, because there are still some big cases to come yet.
There are some big cases. And I'm not saying that they've necessarily changed their ideology entirely, but I think when it comes to these types of cases that are fundamentally about rights that are enshrined in law and in the Constitution, I think that there has to be a line drawn that says we're not going to dismantle things that are written in law things that are written in the Constitution, things that we've been practicing for 250 years or more, right, in the United States.
Well, either way, it is a good day for democracy. I'll take the win, or at least I'll take what, you know, this shouldn't have been even on the table. Again, it's one of those things I don't even know why they took, but I'm glad this time they're on the right side of history, and we'll see where things go. But as the horrible continues, I'd love to have you come back and share some thoughts. Appreciate the time.
Every once in a while, we have a little sunshine in July. It's a good way to go into July 4th to celebrate the things that we know America actually stands for. And that is freedom and democracy for all people, and not a cramped view of what those rights mean. And I think today the Supreme Court gave us something to celebrate.
I'm there with you. Kathy, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Kathy Fang, she is the Vice President of Programs at Common Cause. Make sure you check out their website, commoncause.org. We'll get links out on social media. We'll take a quick break, right back. Stick around and listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1880. That was the day that Helen Keller was born in Tuscumbia, Alabama. 2 years later, she lost both her sight and hearing due to an illness. With the help of a teacher by the name of Ann Sullivan, Helen learned how to communicate again. Her inspiring story was retold in the play and movie, The Miracle Workers. Keller spent the rest of her life advocating for people with disabilities, as well as a woman's right to vote and a woman's right to birth control. But did you know she was also an outspoken supporter of the cause of labor? Helen was a socialist and a member of the Industrial Workers of the World Union. In 1912, Helen sent a check to support textile workers on strike in Little Falls, New York. She accompanied the check with a letter that captured her commitment to the labor movement. She wrote of the women out on strike, quote, "Their cause is my cause. If they are denied a living wage, I also am denied. While they are industrial slaves, I cannot be free. My hunger is not satisfied while they are unfed. I cannot enjoy the good things of life which have come to me if they are hindered and neglected. I want all the workers of the world to have sufficient money to provide the normal standard of living, a decent home, healthful surroundings, opportunity for education and recreation. I want them all to have the same blessings I have. I, deaf and blind, have been helped to overcome many obstacles. I want them to be helped generously in a struggle which resembles my own in many ways." Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Interesting story over at the newspaper of the investor class, the Wall Street Journal. It's amazing how they do this pitch of, you know, you should want to work till you die. You know, you should want to work from the day you're born to the day you die. And they point out in this article that people over 80 are working more. In fact, they're pointing out that they're the largest growing segment of the, their age group is the only group growing in labor participation. Everybody else is lazy. All of the younger groups are actually falling in labor participation, but the 80-year-olds, the octogenarians, they're growing. There's more of them in the workforce. In fact, they point out that about 650,000 people over 80 were in the workforce last year. They're saying that's about 18% more than just 10 years ago. So people are living longer. Evidently, this is the frame. People are living longer. They get bored in retirement. There's only so much golf you can do. There's only so much puttering around the house. They want jobs. They want to go to work. And look, there are some people, look, if they trot out a bunch of names. They trotted out Harrison Ford, I guess, is over 80. They trotted out, Jane Goodall, some CEOs. You know what they didn't trot out? The bricklayer, the truck driver, the people who have to work to make ends meet. Didn't talk about them. And this, what this really is about, and it's a good puff piece. It's a good PR piece. It's like when they find an 80-year-old guy who's got to be a greeter at Walmart because he needs to make money to pay for his prescriptions or for his supplement to Medicare or whatever, just to make ends meet because his retirement hasn't kept up with inflation. They always make it this wonderful puff. Isn't that wonderful? He's working. Oh, that's great. Look at him out there. Yeah. Look, I'm all in favor of people who want to work and don't need to because it's what gets them blood flow and all that. That's great. But I got to think, of the 650,000 people over 80 who are working, the story is not, I'm bored. I'm not thinking that's it. I'm thinking, I didn't think I was going to live this long. And I didn't save enough, and now I've run out of money, and now I got to go back to work to be able to pay for the prescription drugs that have kept me alive this long. Because, again, we've got Republicans in Congress who will do nothing on prescription drugs. Because we're Americans. We pay full price. But this is another one of these moments where you go, they're pushing this idea that, these people want to work longer. And you know what's coming next. The next sentence, the next puff piece is, Americans, they're putting off Social Security. They're voluntarily putting off Social Security until they're, whatever. So it makes it easier for them to raise the Social Security age. So it makes it, people want to work longer. We're just giving the people what they want, which is insane. Because here's what we know. Social Security's got some problems. By, 2033, I think it is. They're going to have to start cutting back on benefits because we're going to start dwindling down on money. And the reason that we're dwindling down on money is not because baby boomers are retiring or people are taking advantage of the program that they've paid into. No, it's not that at all. It's the fact that there's not enough money. It's the fact that we've had a massive redistribution of wealth over the last 40 years. When Reagan did the whole, we're going to raise Social Security taxes enormously, 6.2% on workers and employers, because how was it framed? We've got to get the pig through the python, because the baby boom generation was so large that we had to put money aside. So that you had to get the pig through the python. So we had to have this massive influx of cash to go into the program. And they did. What they didn't plan on, and this is the problem with where Social Security has a problem. Two things. We've got a cap on it, so rich people only pay so much. And I think the cap's like $160,000. So if you make 20 gazillion dollars, if that's earned income, like going to work, you're only paying out 160 grand, where someone who makes 100 grand a year pays every dime of their earnings into Social Security. That's a problem. We could scrap the cap, solve our problem just like that. The other problem, and the bigger problem, is the fact that in the 80s, a much larger share of wealth went to working people. You had much stronger unions. Wages were much higher for working people. They were. And you didn't have this all-out assault that happened Reagan forward on people's ability to get better wages, hours, and conditions. So as your wages have stagnated over these 40 years, you're not paying as much into Social Security. So back in the 80s, when the actuaries figured out how this was going to work, they had assumed that, Reaganomics wasn't going to destroy the working class of this country. And they assumed that wages would continue to keep up as they had been, and taxes coming in, both in the federal coffers and into Social Security, would actually keep up. We wouldn't have a problem with any of this stuff if it weren't for Republicans destroying the ability of workers to get better wages, hours, and conditions by going after unions. Wouldn't have this problem. If we had 25% union density like we had back in the 80s or 35% like we had back in the 60s, people would be making more money. You'd have more money coming into your paycheck and you would, yes, be paying higher tax, more taxes to the government for, you know, funding education and roads and bridges and all kinds of stuff. And we wouldn't have these massive deficits. And also Social Security would be flush with cash. That's something that, you know, we never really focus on, the massive amount of inequality that's happened in this country because of Republican tax ideology, the tax fetish of we've got to slash, we've got to cut, we've got to give the rich more because they're smart. They know what to do with it. And I agree. The rich know what to do with the money. They make themselves more money. Doesn't trickle down to you or me. Sorry, haven't gotten any of that trickle. Doesn't help our local economies much. Look at the massive deficits we're running on the federal level because of what we've done with our tax code. So by creating the wealthiest billionaire class in history, we've basically screwed ourselves. But at least we've got a billionaire class. That's a good thing, right? Who's your favorite billionaire? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I love this quote by Garrett Graff is his name. He says, speaking as a Watergate historian, there's nowhere on thousands of hours of Nixon's tapes where Nixon makes any comment as clear, as clearly illegal, and as clearly self-aware as this Trump tape. And look, the reality is Trump knew exactly what he was saying, and it plays right into what I said from the beginning. I don't think he took the documents to sell. I don't think he's that. I just don't. I think it was more about, hey, look what I've got. Look how special I am. It was all about his ego, I believe. And again, look, his defense of, you know, yeah, there was classified stuff, but it was in boxes with my stuff. And of course, my stuff's more important than your stuff. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the perfect tape. I've asked our good friend Chris Hahn to come talk with us. Chris is a syndicated radio host of the Aggressive Progressive podcast. You can check out his website, ChristopherHahn.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Chris, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, anytime, man.
So what do you make of this comment? I mean, you heard the tape, evidently, that's been leaked, where Trump's going through, shuffling papers, going, hey, look what I got.
So, you know, one of these plaques behind me is a law degree that I paid $80,000 for. And I don't think you need one of those to understand that he incriminated himself on that tape in a way that a prosecutor can only dream a defendant would. He showed that he had something he shouldn't have, that he knew that it was classified and that he could no longer declassify it. Yeah, look, here's my bigger picture, because, you know, even though I went for that law degree, I barely use it other than to point to it once in a while. I'm in politics, and I think in politics, when your opponent does something like that, you beat them up for it. And I don't understand how there are a bunch of mighty midgets in the GOP primary running around, you know, basically not using what they have here. Yep. You've got a stick to beat him with, which, by the way, they've had many sticks to beat him with, which they haven't used. I would beat him with every stick there is. I would beat him with the Stormy Daniels stick every single day. I would beat him with the failed presidency every single day and stop saying things were good under him, because we all forget about that last year where a million Americans died and the economy collapsed. But I'm sure they would have given Obama a pass if it happened under him. But we're giving him a pass?
Yeah.
No. He was responsible for the country in 2020. And it was the worst year any of us can remember in the history of this country. So, no, they're not going to beat him with this stick either, because they clearly don't want to win. They're all waiting for somebody else to do it. And the only one who's doing it effectively is Chris Christie, but he hasn't risen in the polls.
Not at all. But this should tell you something, though, Chris, because, you know, I've had a lot of the red hats say they don't care. They don't care what the tapes say. They don't care what he's accused of. They don't care. He's their guy. They're bought. They're paid for. They bought the T-shirt. They got the hat. They're invested. And you're never going to change their mind.
And they're not even hearing it, Rick.
I know.
They're not even hearing about these tapes. I do this thing called the Daily Rant. It's on a bunch of stations, many of them conservative stations. It's like the only time they hear the truth all day. And I talked about it all day today. And I said, you better call the show that's on after me and you better ask them about it and find out what they have to say about it. Because it's quite frankly ridiculous. I mean, we've already read this, right? It was in the indictment. But then to actually hear him say it and then, you know, hearing them laughing about Hillary and how she misused things. And here he is waving things around and then he's calling for a Coke. Can I get a Coke? I mean, it's like it's just he's a disgusting person. And if I was, you know, I wish one of them would just like consult with me for a day so I could just give them a few talking points to beat him over the head with. Yeah. You know, this is a party that used to be the party of family values. They're backing a guy who is, you know, nobody's denying that he paid off Stormy Daniels to cover up his sexual affair he had with her while his wife was recovering from giving birth. Nobody's denying that. They're just saying that he shouldn't be charged with it. Right? Nobody's saying he didn't do it.
But here's
the thing,
Chris.
Admit he did it. He admits he did it.
Of course he did.
So I don't understand why that, like, you know, how is that not an issue with these evangelical voters? How is this, you know, national security threat not an issue with the party of law and order and the party of national security, putting our soldiers at risk, putting our intelligence community at risk, putting people, quite frankly, just disregarding the work of public servants who have given their life to their country? How is that not the only thing these guys are talking
because
about?
They
cares
don't
about
care.
Ron-
Chris,
this is
they
white
don't
paper
care.
For how he's going to change the economy. Nobody can. Some of them care.
No.
And at some point.
I can't believe that.
But this is the problem. The problem with the GOP is they don't buy the unelectability argument because they have convinced themselves that the guy won. Their delusion is their downfall.
Right.
By the way, that's a nice one for your Twitter people.
That is a nice one.
Make sure. I just came up with that. Their delusion. This is the live Rick Smith exclusive new Chris Hahn soundbite, which will be used on News Nation a million times between now and the time Trump is out of the race. Their delusion is their downfall. Sorry.
No, I mean, that's the reality. And the reality is when all the cruel things they do, that's the point.
Right.
It's who they are. And look, you just had this Faith and Freedom Coalition powwow over the weekend where they threw their undying love at Trump, booed Chris Christie. And even Pence, you would think in that environment, Pence would be the guy that they'd be behind.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I'll tell you, man. So I grew up in the church. I grew up in the evangelical church. And my mother used to always say to me, you know, there's a line in the Bible, you will judge them by their fruit. And my mother used to interpret that as you will judge them by the company they keep. And the company that this man kept, you know, let's not even talk about, you know, what people do for a living. We could just talk about Jeffrey Epstein, who the man partied with. And, you know, there's plenty of video and photos of him partying with Jeffrey Epstein.
How does he get a pass in that?
How do you get a pass on that? The party wants to talk up, call Democrats, you know, groomers. And here's a guy who was convicted of grooming, you know, and Trump partied with him lots of times.
And not only that, I mean, you know, Trump even owned the Miss Teen USA pageant, and there's tapes out there of him talking about walking into their dressing room when they're naked.
I mean, it's
checking out the talent. I don't know how you just let that
they are not Christians. They are Christo nationalists, and they don't care about the word of God. They don't care about their faith. They care about power. And I grew up in it.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in that church, and I left it, long since left it. I read it. I read that Bible a lot, and I knew a lot of people there who really believed in it. And back in the 90s, when I was supporting Bill Clinton and taking crap for it, as a young man, as a, you know, teenager in my early 20s, You know, I look at those same people now, and those same people who gave me, you know, a lot of trouble for backing Bill Clinton, going and working when I was 19 years old. I went and worked at the Democratic National Convention here in New York City. And I took a lot of heat for it. You know, my mother didn't talk to me for a while. So, you know, just to see these people right now, same people backing this guy who clearly is levels of magnitude worse than anybody that has ever served in the office of the president before, on his actions, on his deeds. And I'm not giving Clinton a pass for the things he did. Not anymore. I used to. I'm not anymore.
No, nope, never did.
But to see, you know, these people who I respected and who I thought were standing on their virtue, standing on their morals, standing for what they believed in, they don't believe in anything and they shouldn't be trusted anymore. They get no pass for being blinded by the fact that this guy overturned Roe for them.
Now, I got to get your thought on the most recent post over at the Truth Social. Trump tweeted or socialed out, "Could somebody please explain to the deranged Trump-hating Jack Smith, his family and his friends, that as president of the United States, I come under this act." I'm looking at this, and do you read this the way I do?
Was he talking about the Presidential Records Act?
Yeah, the Presidential Records Act, affirmed by the Clinton Sox case.
Yeah.
Not by this psycho's fantasy. But this phrase, you know, please explain to the deranged Trump-hating Jack Smith, his family and his friends.
Right.
That, to me, that I don't know, you're the lawyer. That seems like not just a veiled threat. That seems like a call to action.
Yeah, that's a threaty. It's a threat. And, you know, we'll have to see how long that this judge is allowed to stay on this case. By the way, I wasn't blown away by her ruling yesterday. I didn't think it was wrong, actually. I thought it was right. I want more openness. I want to know what's going on. And if you're going to give a list of witnesses and you're going to do it under seal, then, you know, you're bringing it into court. You know, things in court should be public. You don't seal those things. You can actually deliver those to the defendant, and the defendant can choose what to do with it if they want. The seal, I don't get that request. But we'll see how she deals with things like this. If they bring, like, if I was Jack Smith, I'd be in court tomorrow, asking for a gag order, asking for, might even ask for him to be held for this, or an increase in his bond. There is a bond.
But I got to tell you, from my perspective, and again, you're the lawyer here, from my perspective, you know, my grandfather always said, you've got the right to remain silent. Use it.
Yeah.
Use it often. I want him out here saying all this crazy stuff because, you know, this seems like evidence.
It is evidence.
This seems like the more they run their mouth, he doesn't have to testify. I got everything he's put on Truth Social.
The first thing lawyers tell you when you're under indictment is shut up. Don't talk anymore. Stop talking, right? It the more you talk, the bigger the hole you will dig. Now, you know, forget about the admission on tape about the documents. He admitted on Fox News that he had some documents and hadn't given them back. Every time he opens his mouth, he gets himself into a deeper hole. And yet somehow nobody wants to use it against him other than Democrats and Chris Christie and Asa Hutchinson, who nobody ever heard of outside of where was he? Mississippi. I don't know what state he was
Arkansas.
Governor of. Arkansas. I knew he was one of those. Right. He's Asa Hutchinson, who says it very calmly and gentlemanly, you know, like all Southerners, everything they say sounds nice, even if it's horrible. So it's not working. Chris Christie, you know, it fits when he's doing it. That New Jersey accent really helps put the edge on the attack.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Chris Hahn, syndicated radio host and host of the Aggressive Progressive Podcast. You can find that wherever you find your favorite podcast. Also, you can check out his website, ChristopherHahn.com. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Now, in the last bit here, I want to get your thoughts because obviously you're the lawyer and you've dealt with a lot of this stuff. You know, I talked about, you know, a couple of days ago about just how long it took for the FBI and the DOJ and for these wheels to move. It was almost like they really didn't want to do any of this stuff. They gave him all the time. They gave him all the opportunities. It's like he wanted this. I mean, there's part of me that goes, his lawyers had to know this was eventually coming, had to know that the DOJ didn't want to do this. It's like he wanted this fight, that he wants this martyr, this victim card to go back to that base who doesn't care what he's being charged with, just that he's a martyr. So
I think
there's part of me that goes, he wants this.
He watched too much Succession. He thinks he's Logan Roy. He is not Logan Roy. He is at best Kendall Roy. And it's sad. It's sad to watch. Actually, he's Connor Roy. So it is a sad, sad, sad. He's a sad man. And yeah, I think he did want it. I think he thought that, that would be, the fight that he could win publicly. Meanwhile, there are other charges brewing, whether it be January 6th or whether it be his perfect phone call in Georgia. Those indictments are coming too. And I think they're worse than this. And he's, clearly in my book, guilty of everything he's been charged with here. And he could talk about the Presidential Records Act all he wants. I'm going to talk about the Espionage Act, which he's charged with. And, the Espionage Act basically gets around his ID classified it with my mind thing, which I don't even think is a defense at this point.
No, look, on the tape, he admitted it. He doesn't have the ability to do any of this.
Right. It's not even really an issue, but they're like, all right, we'll take it off the table. We'll charge you with the Espionage Act. Sounds worse to me than the Presidential Records Act. And it is worse. And at the end of the day, again, no respect for the men and women in uniform who gather this intelligence, who put together this report, who risk their lives for little pay, little recognition, because they believe in this country and what we stand for. And this man pays no regard to it. And there's 30% of this country who still want him in the White House. It drives me crazy. And to think about it and to have the conversations with some of them on it, I talk to a lot of them. I mean, I'm a conservative media. I not anymore. Now I'm on News Nation, but I spent 13 years at Fox, and a lot of people that recognize me. In fact, 90% of the people who recognize me from there, and I have conversations with them about why they like this guy, and I think they feel that nobody has ever paid attention to them before, and I think that's just sad because people have. They just probably weren't paying attention to them because they weren't as entertaining as this guy is.
That speaks volumes. Last question I've got for you. McCarthy's talking about possible expungement of impeachment. Is it possible to expunge an impeachment?
No. Show me in the Constitution where that happens. No. Do whatever you want. Do whatever you want, Kevin, in the, 18 months or so you got left as Speaker of the House. Enjoy it. Enjoy the office. I don't think you're going to be minority leader either when you lose the House. But I know that, you get a little bit bigger balcony as the speaker than as the leader. So I hope you enjoyed it. You made it to where you were as far as you were going to go, and it's over. You're done. One, you won't get reelected speaker. Two, you won't win the majority. And three, you basically sold your soul for a slightly bigger office. Slightly bigger. He's a pathetic human being.
So tell me what you really think.
Yeah. Of all the people, look, and again, I tipped my hat to him last month for the deal, the debt ceiling deal. He made that happen. He was, it was good work on his part, and I have to give credit where credit is due, but this, now he's got to do everything these idiots want him to do. Now he's got to expunge an impeachment, which, by the way, are you going to expunge both of them? Are you going to expunge the one where he sent the mob to kill you, Kevin? He was going to kill you too, right? The mob didn't know who you were. The mob was just going to kill anybody they got their hands on, and you were lucky they didn't. And you went to the floor of the House, and you told the truth after that moment. Yeah. You told the truth in a very effective way. And we have video recordings of that. So you're going to just say that was just a lie too, what you said after January 6th?
Yep,
are you going to expunge that impeachment, or are you just going to expunge the Ukraine one, where he basically was asking a foreign leader to dig up dirt on his political opponent? is, you know, just stop. Just leave office. If this is who you are, do what John Boehner did. I can't deal with these people anymore. I'm going to go sell weed and make some money.
Go sell weed.
Sell weed, Kevin. You'll be happier and you'll be richer and you won't have to deal with these idiots anymore.
There you go. Chris, I appreciate the time. As always, entertaining talking with you. I appreciate the time.
I always love coming here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, our good friend, Christopher Hahn. Make sure you check out his website, ChristopherHahn.com, and the podcast, The Aggressive Progressive Podcast. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. For working people, come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Kevin McCarthy said he's not sure that Trump's the strongest Republican candidate. He says, you know, can he win? Yeah, sure, he can win. Yeah, he can win. The question is he the strongest to win an election? He said, I don't know that answer. And which is weird because he's doing everything he can possibly do to make the... How did Liz Cheney put it? We're electing morons? We're electing idiots. That's what she said. He's doing everything he can do to pander to the idiots. And trust me, the idiots are running the asylum. The fact that they're talking about trying to expunge an impeachment, I don't know how you do that. I don't know. I don't know how you go back and undo all that. But, you know, hey, we'll see. We'll see what they come up with. Now, the thing that gets me is I look at where we're heading and the fact that Trump is leading in every way, shape, and form. It's interesting to me that you have the red hats who saying it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter what information is there. It doesn't matter. He's our guy. And never shall we change. I mean, it's really quite remarkable when you stop and think about it. And this is where the moment that we're in makes me say that we've got to be talking to more and more people and get them getting that perfect phone call. I mean, the tape that just came out, I don't know how you listen to either one of those. I don't know how you allow those things to go unnoticed. If there is a phone call with Biden that is that clear, can you imagine how the right would lose their mind? I listened to a little bit of right-wing talk radio today, and they were doing backflips, mental gymnastics, trying to justify what was on that tape. Oh, it's not a big deal. Everything they can do to ensure that Dear Leader is covered. And at some point as a country, don't we have to go wrong is wrong and hold this person accountable? And now, again, I go back to his Truth Social post today. This kind of threat, this kind of someone needs to talk to Jack Smith, his family and his friends. That's not even dog whistle. That's saying, hey, dim. Hey, poorly educated. Hey, lunatic. Hey, fringe. Go harass that guy. Go get his family. Go get his children. And this guy wants to be president? And there are people who think that behavior is... I was waiting for Van Jones. Where's Van Jones when we need him to say, oh, now he's presidential? This is not somebody who should be on a White House tour let alone living in the White House and in the Oval Office. This is someone who shouldn't even be near the Capitol. But yeah, expungement. If anyone's got a thought, I want to hear it. If there's a way that you think that you can expunge an impeachment, I am all ears. I know that there are a lot of think tanks out there. I know there's a lot of right-wing money out there paying people to dream up bad ideas and bad policy and idiocy. I got to hear the justification for, yeah, we're going to go back and undo the impeachment.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, some good news coming out of the Pennsylvania State House. They recently passed a minimum wage increase, 103 to 100. Actually got a couple of Republicans to come over and say, yeah, maybe working people do need an increase in their wages. The minimum wage will go up to $15 an hour in 2026. As I understand, this is going to peg to inflation, so we won't have a decade plus of the minimum wage being eroded by inflation. Also, the tipped minimum wage going to be 60% of the minimum wage, also to be pegged to inflation. This is important, and it passed the House. Good thing. Now, is it going to get through the Senate? I'm here to share some thoughts on if it's possible to get this bill through the Pennsylvania State Senate. I've asked Pennsylvania State Senator Art Haywood to come give us some thoughts. Art, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for allowing me on. Yeah, we got a tremendous opportunity to raise the wage in Pennsylvania based upon what the House has passed.
And what do you think the chances of that are going to be, given the fact that Republicans overwhelmingly control the state Senate?
So it is an uphill battle, but a couple of things are in our favor. Number one, State Senator Dan Laughlin, Republican from Erie, has proposed a similar bill, not exactly the same, but similar, getting it to 15. So I think that's good news for us. The second piece of good news is that we have 2-1 those who want to see it. We've got the governor wants to see it go up. We've got the House that wants to see it go up, and those are advantages. Now, there are negotiations ongoing now, and as a result of those negotiations, there's no outcome yet. One thing I will say that I see is a challenge around the Commonwealth that, let me describe it as follows. So we know that Pennsylvania is the last in the nation in terms of the wage rate. We know we're surrounded by states with a higher wage. It's up to 14 in New Jersey, getting ready to hit 15, same in New York. On the other hand, West Virginia's at 8.75, Ohio's at 10.10. And so those in the West are looking to Ohio and West Virginia for a standard. Those in the East are looking for New Jersey and New York. So we've got a big tension here. That I hope we can favorably resolve.
Now, once the House passed this increase, and look, I'm 100% behind it, immediately all the naysayer groups, the Commonwealth Foundations and the Employment Opportunity Groups and all of them were immediately out saying, this is going to cost us jobs, Art. We're going to lose thousands of jobs. It's going to be those tip jobs, those restaurant jobs, those service. They're going to all be gone, Art. It's going to be the end of public sector work.
Yeah, we hear these myths over and over again. And what I tell people to do is, first of all, just look to New Jersey. Just look to New York. These are all states that are going to 14 an hour. These are all states where there's no reports of jobs lost, folks are not getting paid anymore. And so while there's all these theories about what might happen, there is a reality of what happened. And that is in New York, that is in New Jersey, all the states that surround us. There's no job losses being reported. I will share one other thing. Raising the minimum wage is really good for businesses. And it's primarily so because low-paid workers will get the money and typically spend it in the neighborhood where they live and work. I say to people, business owners, would you rather have someone come to your store with $100 to spend or $200 to spend? All business owners said they would rather have people with $200. So doubling the minimum wage will create exactly that result, doubling the amount of money that consumers have to spend, and that is really good for business.
But, you know, again, it comes back down to this idea, which side are you on? Are you on the side of the people who work for a living, or the side of the corporate interests who put, it's all about putting more profit into their pockets? But we hear all the time that this caring for the small business owner, we care about, you know, the mom and pops. You know, can you speak to a little bit to this? Because, you know, look, I look at a lot of the low-wage jobs. These are big corporations. These are people who are, you know, the fast food industry. You see a lot of the wages being suppressed. Can you speak a little bit to what this would do to the mom and pops in your view?
Sure. And I also want to share that often the big businesses try to hide behind the very small businesses and pretend that they are going to have the same level of suffering or challenges as small business. And we know that's not the case for any of these national, multinational companies. They can afford it. Second thing is, across Pennsylvania, wages have been going up for small, medium, and large businesses. This is because of the competition. And so now some businesses are paying $16, $17 an hour. And unfortunately, though, some individuals have been left behind, which is exactly why we got to raise the minimum wage. Let me go straight to the point of the mom and pops. So small businesses in New Jersey, mom and pops in New Jersey, surviving. Mom and pops in New York, surviving. Mom and pops in Ohio, surviving. So all of these small businesses that are rightly concerned about this change can look to where the wage has raised and see the experience. And more money that people have to spend, this is an easy equation. The more people that have to spend, the better it is for small businesses, mom and pops, big business, middle-sized businesses. So the increased income from sales should have a big benefit. The second big benefit that we often repeat is turnover. And small businesses, mom and pop businesses, often have a lot of turnover because of the wages that they're paying. What has been consistently found is that a higher minimum wage helps to reduce turnover. And turnover is a cost to all businesses, big and small.
It sounds like there are a lot of really good reasons to raise the minimum wage. But all I keep getting from my friends on the other side is the fear. We're going to lose jobs. And can you talk a little bit to the studies that may have been done in places like, Seattle, where they have raised the minimum wage, and what effect that had on? Because it's my understanding that when you raise the minimum wage, there's actually a slight increase in the number of jobs that are produced instead of the doomsday that's been thrown around that we're going to lose a quarter of all restaurant jobs because of this. Can you share a little bit on that?
Yeah, no, there have been a number of studies, and Seattle is one of the places which has been studied a lot because they went to $15 more quickly than any other place. And what was discovered from the Seattle study is, A, there was no job loss. B, there was some job gain. This job gain is very fundamental. The more money people have to spend, the better it is for the economy, the more the economy grows because there's more sales. And that is the most fundamental economic approach that is out there. People spend money. You have to produce more to respond to demand of what people are buying, and that grows the economy, grows jobs.
Yep.
So that's the most simple explanation I can give to people.
Sounds like common sense.
In terms of why it happens.
No, I mean, it sounds like common sense. I mean, the reality is the more money working people have in their pockets, the more they're going to spend, and the more that business is going to work to get that money. It seems like a positive direction. It seems like, you know, a growing economy, as opposed to we're going to restrain how much money people have in their pockets and you know, make them struggle and suffer and not be able to afford the things they need. It just seems like common sense.
Yeah, it's most often that's right, Rick. It's most often called the virtuous circle, which is the more money individuals, working people have to have, then it pumps more money into the economy. And that is the virtuous circle that we get when we make sure everyday people have a decent standard of living. That's on which the economy is based.
There you go. I hope folks will in Pennsylvania, in our Pennsylvania audience, reach out to your state senator. Say, we need to get this done. We need to get it done soon. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Pennsylvania State Senator Art Haywood. You know, Art, I saw the House has passed a couple other pieces of legislation I wanted to get your thoughts on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in this country, medical debt is a huge thing. In fact, you know, someone sent me a graph of, you know, the number of people who have to file bankruptcy every year because of medical debt, and it was some obscene number, like, you know, 700,000 people a year. Whereas in other countries, you know, like Britain, France, Japan, Germany, nobody files because of medical debt because they have a national health care system. I understand our House has passed something that would help prevent and help provide relief from people with medical debt. I'm curious your thoughts, if you have any thoughts on House Bill 78.
Yeah, I think it's the right direction in which they had the Affordable Care Act from Obamacare was also in response to the high level of bankruptcies that individuals are having to endure because of medical debt and medical bills. So this is going, in my opinion, it's going in exactly the right direction to relieve individuals from some of these high costs from hospitals and physician care. Now, I will say in terms of prospects in the Senate, I think that's going to be a little more challenging, at least to get it done quickly, because we haven't had really any hearings on it or a whole lot of discussion on it. So it may take the Senate more time to get comfortable with this kind of relief. But this is the right direction. This is a kind of reasonable relief that people deserve.
I'm there. And this is one of the reason I bring this up, and I know this is going to be a heavy lift to get past the Senate. Just like I know that the House Bill 1050 to keep preventative care free in health care plans here in Pennsylvania, probably going to be a heavy lift in the Senate. I think these are important campaign issues. I think these are important issues to bring to people and say, look, which side are you on? And then which side are your elected officials on? Because, you know, for too long, we've been letting people off the hook. You know, families are struggling. Families are having a hard time with health care, with education. You go through the struggles, and I think we have to show which side people are on.
Yeah, and I think that is exactly what the House Democrats are doing, and we will do as well. They are demonstrating consistently that they are on the side of everyday people, on the side of everyday people with respect to pay, on the side of everyday people with respect to health care bills. They also passed legislation I started in the Senate to increase the ability of people to save for retirement with automatic payroll deduction. These are all bills directly related to improving the everyday life of Pennsylvanians. And there is a tremendous contrast because the Senate does not yet appear to be willing to do so. Now, I say not yet because we're not done, but if the Senate doesn't align with these important initiatives, we will know where they stand.
Yep. Last question I've got for you. Being from the Philly area, pretty incredible work done on the I-95 bridge. I got to give Governor Shapiro an enormous amount of credit. I thought someone finally did what I've been calling for and start taking credit for stuff. I loved the live cam. In fact, we've used it on the show a number of times. But can you talk a little bit about what it took to get that done and with that moving?
It was amazing. And Rick, I watched the live cam as well some evening. So I give tremendous credit to the leadership of Governor Shapiro to create the direction, create the demand, and get everybody organized in the same direction and do it quickly. I also want to really put a shout out to the union workers in the building trades who were the ones to execute it, to get the work done. Without the building trades, it would not have been done so quickly. You needed those individuals to be willing to work 24/7. That's also what it took. But I give Governor Shapiro a tremendous amount of credit to get that temporary road up. It is used for Philadelphia, but not just Philadelphia. The whole Northeast Corridor, trucks were being delayed, deliveries were being delayed. And so it was very important for our overall economy to get that road up and up again. And you really got to give them a lot of credit. I said to my wife, Josh Shapiro is now America's governor, having gotten I-95 back on track so quickly.
No. What this shows me, and again, you know, I've been talking about this, you know, since the reopening. It shows that we can do big things. When we take off the red hat and the blue hat and we get a hard hat on, we can accomplish good things. And this just shows that when we put, you know, some of this nonsense aside, we can do good things.
I think it will help us raise our aspirations in terms of what we can be in the Commonwealth, what we can be as a nation, and who we can really be. And raising our aspirations, I think, will go a long way in dealing with the prior conversation you had about the status of the former president. Once we can really see that we can be much better than what some of this leadership is selling us, then I think that can help us get beyond those who are trying to drag all of us into the gutter.
I'm right there with you. Senator Haywood, I appreciate your time. Keep up the great work in the Senate, and let's get that minimum wage done. I hope folks will reach out to your office and to others to push in the right direction. If you want to see the minimum wage increased, call your state senator in Pennsylvania and tell them, hey, we need to do this. But, Art, I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Rick, and thanks for your encouragement.
Good stuff, our good friend Art Haywood. Look, at the end of the day, you want something done, call these people early, call them often, and tell them it's time. Now, do it. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1993. That was the day that A.E. Staley locked out 763 workers at their corn processing plant in Decatur, Illinois. Labor management relations grew increasingly hostile with foreign-owned Tate Lyle's decision to bring in new managers. The new management ordered workers to disregard safety regulations. An OSHA investigation found an astonishing 298 violations at the plant, triggering more than $1.5 million in fines. Despite the fines, worker safety concerns persisted. Management proposed a new contract designed to destroy grievance rights, seniority, and worker safety. Even worse, workers would be required to work 12-hour shifts. They would have to be available both night and day shifts at management's whim. 96% of the workers voted to reject the contract. In response, the company locked the workers out of the plant. The locked-out workers were replaced with scabs. As the lockout wore on month after month, and in the face of the employer's refusal to negotiate, the workers had to rely on one another to stay strong. They went door-to-door throughout Decatur to inform the public about what was happening. In 1994 and 1995, the workers were joined on the picket lines by United Auto workers from the city's Caterpillar plant and rubber workers from Bridgestone Firestone. Those workers had gone out on strike as their employers took extreme hard line bargaining positions, earning Decatur the nickname of Strike City. The eyes of the nation were on Central Illinois. It seemed that the Decatur struggle was the stage for the modern labor movement. Workers were fighting back in the age of international mergers and all-out attacks on union workers. 3 days before Christmas in 1995, however, the National Union settled the strike, leaving many of the workers angry with the settlement that took their voice away. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show.
Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something in your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Rick Scott, Skeletor, Florida senator, evidently doesn't want socialists or communists coming to Florida. He warned that socialists and communists not to travel to Florida, they're not welcome. Okay. How about people who steal from Medicare? Yeah, how about people, how about them? Oh, yeah, that's you. Never mind. Speaking of Florida, a woman who really was, you know, guilty on the face, because she was one of the January 6th people. On social media, she put out, "We breached the Capitol, OMG." Insurrection is coming. Hold the line. Stay vigilant. Storming the Capitol to take back our country from traitors. She put all this stuff on social media. Now, remember, on the 6th, when all this happened, I remember going on air saying it's going to be interesting to watch all these people who are going to have to go to trial with all of the treason that they recorded. Because these are people who for weeks, days, months were talking about this stuff. And were, you know, very proud of their treason and promoted the fact, like on Parler and other right wing sites. She pled guilty to what she was already guilty of, a felony charge of civil disorder. We'll see what she gets. I'm sure it's not going to be really long because she only spent, like 10 minutes in the Capitol. But the fact that she went in with the idea that this is an insurrection, it's the mindset that, yes, we're invading the Capitol. And as I said from the beginning, all of those people knew why they were there. Everyone who went to Washington, D.C. on that day went for the express purpose of stopping the certification of the election. It was in the title. It was Stop the Steal. They believed that they had been cheated. They believed what Trump had told them, that everything was rigged. They bought it. They went believing that they were patriots and they were going to water that tree of liberty with the blood of tyrants and patriots. And their mindset was, we're going to stop the election. We're going to stop the certification of this election, even if it means hanging Mike Pence, to which someone did actually build a gallows. You cannot now say, well, you know, we were just walking through the ropes and it was like an ordinary. Nope. For me, you went there with the intent. And this is what happens to traitors. This is what happens. You went there knowing what you were doing. You bought all in. You thought your guy was going to be behind you and your guy screwed you. And the thing that gets me and it's just mind blowing is that they're going through all this stuff and their guy has done virtually nothing for them. It's quite remarkable. Speaking of the guy, you may remember a guy named Stephen Miller, Trump's top immigration advisor. Well, the big story today that came out is evidently Stephen Miller, who, you know, some have akin to Goebbels or some of the Nazi elite. I'm not going there. But, you know, I got to be honest. The fact that he was... It's being reported that he wanted to, I don't know how you do this. I actually don't. But evidently he was pushing Trump to attack the migrants coming into the country using drones. Literally, you know, using drones. And he wanted to blow up boats full of unarmed civilians who were coming with predator drones. And these, again, these are the very best people. Remember, Trump is only going to surround himself with the very best people. So this idea that, yeah, okay, there's a ship of migrants coming towards the U.S., bomb them. If that comes into your head, if that's a thought, you're a horrible person. There's just no other way of putting that. Look, if you say, yeah, we'll capture them, you know, we'll put them on a boat and send them back, put them on a plane and send them back. If, you know, that, okay, you can think that, but bomb them? Let them drown in the ocean at your hand? I mean, it's bad enough if you let them, if the boat sinks and you do nothing to help them. That's horrible as well. But the idea that actively gonna bomb them? And it's one of those stories that I read and I'm going, you know, I'm actually not surprised. I'm actually not shocked anymore. And that's one of the things that I guess I'm attempting to deal with, that my level of shock is way out of whack. My level of expectations of others and their humanity is kind of out of whack. And I got to deal with that, because there are people. And as I say about my Republican friends who want to do this kind of stuff, the cruelty really is the point. You know, they believe that their immigration policy should be, you know, if we bomb one of them, nobody else will come. We'll send that message. And they justify it in their head. Yeah, we'll take out a couple hundred of them and we'll let them all drown and we'll record it and we'll put it out as a warning to others. Yeah, that's that. And the weird thing is, and I come back to the cruelty being the point, that's something that the base, the Red Hat Brigade, all behind. And I got, again, it speaks volumes to who they are, especially the ones that you know wear the cross around their neck. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Does that surprise you? Shock? Not really. Anyway, if you miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.